of this discussion was, how can I make sense of, say, this integral when g is purely imaginary? When naively I look at this, and if g is purely imaginary, I have a pole when x is at float value of g. So I have a pole, what am I doing? How am I making sense of this integral when g is purely imaginary of this one? Right? So if g is purely imaginary, naively there is a pole, and as I was explaining, the way to make sense of it, if we want to define it as analytic continuation of the case where g is not purely imaginary, is by just putting an I0 here. Because this I0 here tells you that this is how you should think. And if you think of this way, in this way, there is no ambiguity. Who cares that I mean that the singularities are very close to the contour or not? I just close it above and get one, close it below and get one. And there's nothing special about integrating very close or very far away from a singularity. I'm always integrating either below or above. It's not important that I'm close or far. Okay? So for this formula to have a meaning when g is purely imaginary, there are poles on the integration contour. And I need to tell, do I go above or do I go below? And this information is contained in putting an I epsilon. And it tells you that this is how you should go. And it tells you that you can close above and get one, or close below and get also one. And of course, by continuity, this picture, I can also think sometimes it's useful to think it in this way. Okay? Now, so I'm going to move on. And let's, for example, solve one of the questions that I asked you, I think the first one, probably. So, we saw that we had 1 over z, 1 over x plus or minus ig, minus 1 over x minus ig. And if I put here a 1 over g, let me not put anything. So this is equal to g over x squared plus g squared, and I want to have it properly normalized with 1 over pi. For that, I have here 1 over 2 pi I. Okay? There's nothing deep about this. This is just a fact. Okay, good. So now this is a properly normalized Lorentzian. So this is a Lorentzian, and in below this Lorentzian, I have area, an area which is equal to 1. Right? Why? Well, we saw there are several ways of doing it. You can either compute this integral, you know how to integrate an arctangent, or you can remember that this was our definition of 1. You pick the upper pole or you pick the lower pole. Yes?
I think you are supposed to have it plus there.
Ah, of course. All right, this is 0, right? So, of course, yeah. Plus here. Good, thank you. So, we saw that integrating the left-hand side, you can close the contour above and get 1, below and get minus minus 1, which is 1 as well, and therefore this is properly normalized. The area is 1. Now as g goes to 0, this becomes a very picked Lorentzian, right? This is what you get when g goes to 0. When g goes to 0, if x is of order 1, you can drop this function, unless x is of order g, and then the function actually explodes. Right? So the function is huge if x is of order g, and it's extremely small if x is of order 1. So it's a very picked Lorentzian. Okay? So this height here would be of order 1 over g, if this width here would be of order g. And the area is still 1. So of course, when g goes to infinity, this goes to, when g goes to 0, sorry, this goes to a delta function. Just a function which is very peaked. When I integrate, I just catch whatever is in that region. Okay? So, of course, the integral dx over 2 pi I, 1 over x minus I0 minus 1 over x plus I0. The example I had was this, x squared plus 1, x 4 plus 2x squared plus 2. This stuff here is a delta function. When x is equal to 0, this is just 1 half when x equal to 0. And therefore, this is 1 half. Okay? So this was the very first question. Okay, so how do we see this function being a delta function for this example or for any other example without this picture of a function which is very fixed and which has unit area, which is our usual definition of delta functions? So how to understand that this 1 over x plus I0 minus 1 over x minus I0 is a delta function? Because suppose you are integrating dx, that delta function of x times the function of x. Now, this is equal, and let this function here be analytic. Okay? Now, this is equal to the integral dx over 2 pi I, and then I have f of x over x minus I0 minus f of x over x plus I0. Okay? So what is this term here? What am I integrating here? Here I'm integrating a function with a pole at plus I0. And here I'm integrating a function with a pole at minus I0. So I can think that for the first term, my pole is at plus I0. So how should I draw it? If I want to, okay, so let me draw. So the pole is at plus I0. So the pole is here. This is the first term. Or, as I said, alternatively, I can put the pole on the real axis and then deform the contour a bit. By continuity, both pictures give exactly the same. And this one here, I have a pole at minus I0. I have a pole here at minus I0. Or, by continuity, I can put the pole at the real axis and just deform the contour a bit away. Okay? So now, this guy here is equal to the integral on this contour minus the integral on this contour of f of x over x. I can drop the I0 because I'm telling you in the picture how to deal with this origin. I'm telling you. Computed going above minus going below. So I can drop the I0 because I drew this picture. So this picture allows me to not to put the I0 there. This is what the picture does for you. And of course, this integration here is canceling almost everywhere, except the only part which remains is this small part going up here minus this small part going down here, which is nothing but the full circle going around. I'm not liking the orientation. Because I chose the wrong ones, right? I drew the wrong ones, right?
Everything's right until the equal sign.
This equal sign is wrong. No, this result I like. I actually don't like this to the guy. Because you see, this first term is this. Why did I draw it going up? It should go down. It was this. And the second term was this one. It should go up. So this is the wrong part. So what's wrong is this part here. I have going down minus going up. So this picture here is good. Okay? So it's the integral around zero. So this is just the integral around absolute value of x equals 0 of f of x over x. But this is just f of 0. Okay? So it is a delta function. I integrate delta against f, and I read the value of f at 0. Okay? What would happen? What about if instead of considering a minus here, I would consider a plus? What would I get instead? Can someone tell me? So we saw that, let me write, we saw so far that 1 over 2 pi I, 1 over x minus I0 minus 1 over x plus I0 is equal to delta of x. Now I want to think, how do I interpret 1 over x plus I0 minus 1 over x minus I0. First of all, notice something important. Whenever I put these I0s, there's something implicit which I didn't even bother telling. I'm thinking of this as a distribution. I'm not thinking of it as a function of x, but as a distribution that I will use to act on test functions. Right? So I think of it automatically as something which will be used to integrate against something else, to convolute with something else. This is more general than a usual function. A usual function, I can... So these, of course, are... These guys here are distributions. You can think as a limit of some function, but in practice, it's a distribution. So here, I also... Sorry, I want a plus here. Minus... Plus, but a plus sign here. So all the signs were wrong. So I want to understand what happens when I integrate this against a function f of x. Now again, this is an integral. F of x over x of this contour plus this contour here. So this is equal, these contours here, to twice now the contour which goes here, stops at 0 and then goes again. Okay. Plus the integral going down plus the integral going like this. Okay? What is this equal to? What can I do now? I'm thinking if there is a, what's the fastest way to explain, but in the meantime, you can tell me what can I further simplify? Is this clear to everyone? Twice this, it's because now they don't cancel, they add up. And then there is this part at the origin which is slightly different, and I need to average both. So what is the integral, instead of a full circle, what is the integral of a semicircle, like this, of f of x over x around 0? Sorry? Exactly. So close to this point, for sure, f of x is not changing a lot, so of course this is equal to f of 0 integral 1 over x around half. And what is this? This is equal to f of 0 integral from 0 to pi d of e to the I theta over e to the I theta. Okay, sorry, there is 1 over 2 pi I. And this is just I d theta, and when I integrate from 0 to pi, I get, therefore, 1 half of f of 0. So when I integrate only half, I get half of the residue. I don't get the full residue. Okay. And when I integrate this plus this with this orientation, these two terms add up to 0. I get 1 half of the residue minus 1 half of the residue. So I get just twice the integral where I stop some epsilon away from the singularity, and then go on. This is also a good way of defining an integral. I have a pole, I decide to start epsilon, to stop epsilon away, to start again epsilon away, and this integral is finite. If I stop here. Okay. What is this integral? What is an integral where I decide to stop a bit before the singularity and then start a bit after the singularity? This has a name, this kind of integration. This is what is called principal part integration. Right? This is what you learned as principal part. When you want to consider the principal part integral of 1 over x, for example, you stop at minus epsilon, and then you start again at epsilon, and the result is finite. How do we see that the result is finite? Because, of course, all the objects we are dealing with are manifestly finite. So it needs to be. So we conclude, our conclusion is that 1, putting all the factors correctly, 1 over x minus I0 is equal to the principal part of 1 over x, in the sense that if I convolute this with something, I should integrate with principal parts, plus I pi delta function of x, and 1 over x plus I0 is equal to the principal part of 1 over x minus I pi delta of x. Okay? This is quite an important formula. Okay? So this stands for principal part integration. So it's integration where you open a small interval. Okay, so I want to consider two more examples of two more analytic continuations to illustrate this logic of deforming the contour, because I believe it's probably not familiar to most of you to think about this function test. Integral representations. So let's consider another example. Is everything clear here? Yes.
So I'm not sure,
like, does the P refer to that whole integral, or is P acting on the whole integral? No, P refers to one over x. So if I multiply something by, if I integrate now this with a function, this part is just a function itself, and this part stands for integral on the principal part sense of one over x. If you want, I can put a bracket.
One over x times a function
integrated with a convention that you stop a bit before zero and then start again a bit after zero. You open a small interval on the, where the singularity is. Now, I want to consider two more very simple analytic continuations. So first of them, a function log of z minus a of z minus b. Okay? Can someone tell me an integral representation for this function? What could an integral representation for this function be? Sorry? 1 over? We know that log is the integral of 1 over z. So a very good example would be integral dw over w minus, or over z minus, w minus z from a to b. This is a good integral representation. The logic, whenever we want to, the principle of analytically continued by integrals is always the same. We want to trace a function which is very explicit, but which has singularities, like log has log singularities, square root has square root singularities. It is explicit, it's in closed form, but it's not our, but we prefer x squares and 1 over x's and something without singularities. So we pick a function with like log, which has singularities when z approaches a or when z approaches b. This integrand here is a perfectly regular function, only 1 over w minus z. There are no logs, no square roots, no nothing. But on the other hand, we have to do an integral, right? But now, to study analytic properties of the left-hand side, which is quite complicated, unless, if you forget, you just need to know stuff about analytic functions of 1 over z minus w, and just play with contours and run away, and you can recover all the analytic properties if you ever forget. So say for Bessel functions, for example, I will write you a Bessel function, and it will be not so obvious what are the analytical properties if I go around or whatever. I write it as an integral which only involves functions that we all know how to manipulate, and then everything becomes clear. So what are we doing here? We have a point, A and B, and we integrate from A to B in the W plane. Okay? And there is a point Z a point Z somewhere here. And who cares about Z? I can move Z however I want. And this in this contour integral here is perfectly smooth and gives me something. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Good. So, as Z, now we want to think of analytic continuation in Z. So Z is our variable and we want to move Z. So we want to think of this as a function of Z. It also has two extra parameters, A and B, but we want to think of it as a function of Z. And in particular, we might wonder what happens when Z goes around. Okay? So what should we do when Z goes around? Well, as we said before, there are two possibilities. One possibility is we deform the contour. So Z is trying to catch us and we are going away. Okay? So when Z would go around, we would just run away. And we would have this we would end up with this contour at the end of the day. A, B. Right? This is a perfectly legitimate endpoint. But this endpoint, I would like to relate it to the original point. But what is this endpoint? This endpoint is, of course, the same as drawing something like this. Sorry. A, B. This is my point Z. This is the W plane. And as we said before, this part here is equal to zero. It goes in the opposite directions. And therefore, this is equal to the original integral A, B, plus the integral around this point Z, which is the integral around W for when the W minus Z is equal to some epsilon, some integral around Z of dW over Z minus W, which is just 2 pi I. Okay? So what do we deduce? We deduce that as Z goes around, A, f of Z goes to the original integral, f of Z, plus 2 pi I. Sorry? As Z goes around B, f of Z goes to itself again, plus 2 pi I. Okay? This is, B is a log branch point. If you want, definition of log branch point would be this. Okay? Is this clear? I would deform the contour not to hit the singularity, which is moving here. I would run away from it. And then this just amounts to picking it. Now, of course, an obvious comment. We can, this procedure is called, we call normally in the jargon, pick the pole before the end. That is, as soon as Z goes through, I can say that I have immediately this integral when Z, and then this integral moves. But as soon as the point Z decides to go through this contour, I can immediately deform the contour and separate it into the line plus the contribution around. Right? This would be equal to this immediately after crossing the, immediately after entering. And this is, of course, equal to that. And then as I would move, I just have to make sure that my bubble is moving with the point so that everything is smooth. Okay? So I can pick, I can deform the contour and only at the very end do this procedure of eliminating and separating. Or as soon as the point crosses, I can immediately separate, as soon as the point crosses, I can immediately separated into two contours, and then as I deform the point, I have to smoothly carry my bubble with it. Is this clear? Yeah? No? No? Okay. So this is obvious for this function f of z. I'd like to consider a slightly more complicated example now, but I would like this example to be extremely clear. Is it clear to everyone? Sorry?
I just want to look at it
further. Uh-huh. Okay. So let me give you a few seconds so that you can tell me whether it is really completely clear or not.
So the point that you can pick up as many bubbles.
Sorry? And now, once we are done, of course. And now we already are here. Now we can go around and pick another bubble, etc., and we'll continue to pick 2 pi i's. Exactly, yeah. Good. I want now to consider a more interesting example where I have the function. Okay, I hope it is clear. I want to consider a slightly more interesting function where there are singularities, where we have a two-sheeted surface, for example, or a more, in this case it is a infinitely sheeted surface, and in some sheets there are singularities and in some other there are not. And we are going to see that we start in some sheet and there are nothing special, then we go around some point, and when we come back to what was before a peaceful region, now there are singularities there. Which just means that we are in our parking lot and we are going to the second floor and there are poles and stuff. Okay? So the function I want to consider is the integral from 0 to 1 dw 1 over z minus w z minus a. So w minus z, w minus a. Okay. Now, this function can be integrated, this integral can be computed exactly. This I want to think of it again as a function of z. And this integral is just 1 over z minus a times log of 1 minus z over z times a over 1 minus a. Okay. So notice from this part here that when z goes to a, this part goes to 0. Because I get log of 1. And therefore, at least in what we will see as what we would call the standard choice of branches for the log, all this combination is regular, despite this pole here. It's regular when z goes to a, at least in some sheets. Now, this is quite clear when you think of the integral. Let's draw the W plane. What are the special points? There are 4 special points, the end points. So let's think of the W plane. 0, 1, the point A, let's put it here, and the point Z. And I'm integrating here. Now suppose, so let z approach a. I'm still integrating from 0 to 1. I have my point z, and I move it towards my point a. Okay? And now z and a are very close. Who cares? The integrand is perfectly regular. I'm integrating from 0, sorry, this is 0. I'm integrating from 0 to 1. Who cares what is happening here? The integral is from here to here. It's perfectly regular. Nothing happens, right? But you can see here. You integrate w minus a squared from 0 to 1. A is somewhere else. Who cares? I'm integrating a perfectly finite function. Is it clear? But now, let's suppose we do it by a different path. So let Z approach A as follows. We pick Z here, and we want it to approach A by going through the other side of the point 1. What happens now? Now we cross an integration contour. Okay? Can I erase this part here? So immediately after crossing the integration contour, let's pick the pole that we get. So as we are crossing, the contour, we deform it slightly. Here was our Z, and Z is now here, and here is A. And this is, of course, equal to the original contour from 0 to 1 plus here is 0, here is 1 plus the integral around the point Z. And here is A. And here is A. So I hope it's not confused. This is two copies. This are two copies of the complex plane. One copy here plus another copy. Now, what is the value of this integral here? I'm just picking the pole around the point. This is the W plane, right? This is the pole W equal to Z. Right? What is the residue of the integrand at W equal to Z? What is 2 pi I times the residue? It's equal to 2 pi I. What is the residue when W is equal to Z? Z minus A. Times 1 over Z minus A. So this is equal to the original integral from 0 to 1. And then a point here, which is approaching A, plus the function 1 over z minus a times 2 pi I. And now this is a dangerous guy, right? Now, as this function, as z continues to approach a, there will be a pole there. Okay? And now, as this one moves here, so now there is a pole. So this is just telling you that in this surface, you would go to another sheet, and in that sheet, there will be a pole. Okay? And indeed, from here, okay, first, please understand this. Okay? So we would go, we would pick it, and we would get a singularity there. And this is perfectly clear. If you look at the final result, this is exactly what you know happens. As Z goes to A, if you are on the first sheet, this is 0. If you are on the other sheet, this is 2 pi I, not 0. And when this is 2 pi I, then it doesn't cancel the pole. Right? So indeed, when we go around Z equal 1, we go from the sheet where log of 1 equal to 0 to the sheet where log of 1 equal to 2 pi I, so that we have a pole. Okay. let me finally give you mention that this is not just having fun deriving previously known facts by playing with integrals. For example, suppose I tell you to study some physical problem and study the analytic properties of the function li2 of z, the logarithm of z. You probably don't even know what this function is. You probably never used it. Now, I could give you several definitions. I could give you a series representation. I could tell you some differential equation that it obeys. I could give it to you in many different ways. And then it would be still a pain to study its analytic properties. To plot this function, you would plot it in Mathematica, try to understand if it has curves, poles, singularities, etc. But for example, this function, li2, is just given by minus the integral from 0 to 1 dt over t log of 1 minus zt. And just from this, from knowing this, you can again play with what happens to the integral, which goes now from 0 to 1, and I have some point z somewhere else, in this case in the t-plane. And you can think what happens when z goes around 1, when it goes around 0, etc., and understand in this way what are the analytic properties of this function li2 of z. Okay? And I suggest that you try to play with this function, try to guess the analytic properties by using this integral representation, and compare by what you would get by doing many plot treaties in Mathematica of this li2 and checking that, okay, it has indeed a cut where I was expecting the discontinuity of the function. You will conclude that the discontinuity of the function li2, instead of being 2 pi I, is a log. And then there is a function li3 whose discontinuity is a li2, etc. It's like a tower of functions. So this function li2 is a function which has a discontinuity which, instead of being 2 pi I, it's a log. It picks a log when you go around some points. And you can try to play with this function, the new function, and compare indeed the kind of analytic properties that you deduce by simple contour manipulations with those that you find from plotting the function in Mathematica. It is, for example, a function which appears all the time in scattering amplitudes at one loop, for example, in particle physics. Okay. Let me move to the last example of analytic continuations, which is also one of the examples that I asked you about in one of the handouts, which is about the gamma function. I just want to make a very simple and very trivial comment. I'm sure that the gamma function all of you know. So the gamma function, gamma of u, is the integral, of course not from minus infinity as I wrote in the handout, but from 0, e to the minus t, t to the u minus 1, dt. And again, this is what you would find in the Wolfram website, and this function is a function which can be defined for any u in the complex plane. But you would, of course, write some integral representation with some original domain of validity. And here, for this integral to be convergent, you would say that the real part of u should be bigger than 0, so that the singularity at the origin is still integrable. Okay, good. But now, we could decide to integrate by parts, and I always integrate by parts in the wrong direction and end up with another true identity, but not the one that I want, so let me see which one do I want. I want to say that this is, of course, equal to 1 over u integral e to the minus t d dt of t to the u, right? This is clear. I take the derivative, I get the u, which cancels the u, which is there, and then I go back to the previous formula. And then I can jump the derivative from there to there, and therefore I conclude that this is equal to 1 over u integral e to the minus t, t to the minus u. T to the u. Okay? And now, what I want to claim is that this integral representation is now valid for real part of u bigger than minus 1. Okay? So before, we only knew how to deal with a function in this region here. And now, if we use instead this formula here, we can use it a bit more. This would be now minus 1. We can now use it in a slightly bigger region, and not only the original one. Okay? So we enlarged the region where we know the gamma function. Okay? Yes? From here to here?
Yes.
I integrated by parts. I write this, the derivative is acting here. It's minus the derivative acting on the other side. Because of this minus, minus derivative of e to the minus t is e to the minus t. Okay. Sorry? Where? No, I took the derivative. The derivative, instead of acting here, now I integrate by parts, it acts here, so it doesn't touch this. It's still t to the u. No? Good. Great. So, by doing this, by integrating by parts like this several times, I could increase the region where the gamma function is well, where this integral capacity is well defined by steps of 1. Okay? Then I could write this as 1 over u times u plus 1 times integral e to the minus t, t to the u plus 1, and so on. And now this would be valid for real part of u bigger than minus 2, etc. Okay? This would be another way of analytically continuing a function. I know the function, you give me the function in some region. I do some step which is perfectly legitimate in this region. And what I end up getting is something which is analytic beyond the region that you gave me. And because analytic functions are unique, this is the function itself.
Why must in the original integral must the real quantity be larger than 0?
Because when t goes to 0, we don't want this to blow up. Right? So if t is minus 3, you get the integral of t to the minus 3 goes to the origin, it gets false. Right? You need bigger than 0, because if it's bigger than 0, it's integral. Right?
Okay.
An integral from integrals around 0 of 1 over t to the 1 minus u goes like t. T to the u minus 1 goes like t to the u, right? So if u is bigger than 0, it's, it goes to 0. It's a conversion. Okay. But another way of saying this is by looking at this integration by parts as generating an identity for the gamma function. What this is nothing but the gamma function at u plus 1, because if I put here u plus 1, this is what I would get. Here. Right? So I did use that gamma of u plus 1 is u gamma of u. And this means that if I want to know the function, that I know the function only in this region here originally, and now I want to compute it in this value here, and what I do is I get to know it before, I do a couple of jumps until I am in the region where I know the function. Okay? Why does this work? Because this function here, I can write this identity as gamma of u over u gamma of u equal to 1. So this one is an analytic function in this region here. Here I have 1. Now analytically continue 1. What's the analytic continuation of 1? It's 1 everywhere. So if I have an identity in some region, the identity must hold everywhere. Okay? So this holds, even though you might think that I derived it in a region which was just some region in the complex plane, this holds everywhere. I use it in some region where I have no singularities here. So let zero be here, and I am using it here. I derive this relation in some finite region. This relation holds in some finite region of the complex plane. I don't need it to hold everywhere, just some finite region. Now I analytically continue one, and I get one everywhere, so it holds everywhere. Okay? Good. So I have no more theory for today, but I think maybe we would have time to go through a bit of the subtleties in Mathematica about the problem that you did yesterday. So tomorrow I will show you how to study the harmonic oscillator. Tomorrow I think we will be only doing the harmonic oscillator in the morning, and then in the tutorial I will be doing some other stuff. Good. So any questions about all this? So try to go through it in detail at home and come up with questions that you might have. So now I don't want to discuss the physics or the math of the map, the inverse map, and shifting the circle, and all this. I assume that this you have done during the tutorial and thought by yourself that to go from the plane to the circle to the plane, you use z going to z plus 1 over z. When you want to go back, you use the inverse map. And I assume that you played with it. So this long will be just about Mathematica. Okay. So here is the first subtlety that you might have encountered. We have a map f of z equals z plus 1 over z. So let's maybe start here. Let's close this and start from scratch. So we started with f of z, which was a map, z plus 1 over z. And then we tried to invert the map. So we said solve, is probably you found in help yesterday. We want to invert the map. So we say solve f of x equal to z with respect to x. So first subtlety here, the way we say to solve, we use two equals and not one equal. One equal is for assignments. When you use one equal, you say this variable is equal to this. When you use two equals, it's for comparison. You want to ask when is f of x equal to z. You don't want to say to Mathematica, whenever you find z replaced by f of x. Right? Well, it's more clear if I write it this way. So one thing is to say that let's use capital Z. Z equal to f of x. Now whenever I click capital Z, I get what f of x is. Another thing is to ask, is z equal to f of x? Z. Is z equal to x of x? Now I get an equation. Okay? So there is, it's a different thing to have an equation where we want to manipulate and solve and ask ourselves, or to make an assignment to say the letter on the left-hand side is defined as the right-hand side.
So can you assign an equation to a variable?
You can assign an equation to a variable, yes. Good. Yes. So this is an equation. This part here is an equation. So we can call it, as Callum was saying, equation. An equation equal to this. Okay? So the equation is the comparison between z and f of x. Okay? So if I run an equation, this is what I get. I get, here is the equation. Okay? I don't want to tell that whenever you find z replaced by f of x. I want to write what an equation is. Okay. Good. Is this clear? Now let's solve this equation. Let's solve equation with respect to x. And Mathematica solves and gives these two square roots. Now, the way Mathematica gives the output of a solve is by a list of replacements. So she gives you a list of replacements, and you can, if you want one of them, you pick the... Okay, so this is how it works. Now you can pick the element 1 of this list. Okay? So this notation is A, B, and you want to ask what's the first element of this list. And this gives A. Okay? What is the second element of this list? It's B. Okay? So now there is again, if you want this to be a bit, to look a bit nicer, you can click escape, 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 escape. You see? And it looks a bit shorter and it's easier to identify when you have many brackets. You see these double brackets very close, you know that this is a part of an expression. So to go from the first one to the second one, I put escape here and escape here, escape here and escape here. Okay? And there is yet another way, which I don't recommend because, okay, therefore I will not tell. Okay, good. So we could ask, for example, give me the first solution to this equation. This gives this one. And then I could say, replace x by that. And this would give me x. Right? Okay, slower. Let's say solution is equal to this. And the solution is a replacement rule. And then replace x by solution. Okay? So let me erase this and this. Now, is everyone happy with this? Okay. Okay, so this is how Mathematica computes this. So now let's plot this. And this, here we will find our first problem. Let's make a plot 3D of this function. So let's say that this will be what we want to plot. Let's call it to plot. We replace by solution, then replace z by x plus iy. Okay, we want to plot, to make a plot 3D, so z will be x plus iy. And we will want to plot, say, the imaginary part, for example, of this. Okay, this is what we want to plot. And now we make plot 3D of what we want to plot in the region x between minus 3 and 3, y minus 3 and 3, for example. So, did someone run plot 3D? Is someone at the did someone manage to run this plot 3D? It worked nicely?
Yep.
But it gives something awful, right?
Y is outside the bracket.
Okay, good. So we got something which looks a disaster. it's something with some huge some discontinuities, put something a bit terribly up with. Computer. What is this arrow?
No.
I never got. What's happening? Good. So if I run this, this is the kind of thing I get. Right? So I get something which is everything but smooth. Right? Now, is this really a problem? Let's see. Let's plot both solutions and not only one of the solutions. So let's not pick the first one. Let's pick both. So let's erase this where we asked for one, and we have now both solutions. And then just let's just run two plots, and now we add a vector with the two solutions. Okay? There were two replacement rules. This is one solution. This is another solution. Okay? And now let's plot it again. And run the 3D plot. And now, everything looks smooth. Now I have a surface here, you see? And I'm here, and I continue in this region here. Then if I go here, I change sheets. I go here. I go back to the previous sheets. And I'm always moving in this two-sheeted Riemann surface, and everything is smooth. So Mathematica was just choosing some branches that they are not the ones we would choose. Okay, we would choose something else. She decided to choose these particular branches for the function. Let's see what we mean by this. Let's tell her to paint the first solution in red and the second solution in blue. So let's put plot style, red, comma blue. And you see, this is her choice. For her, blue is sheet 1 and red is sheet 2. This is not what we would do. Right? Normally you would paint this in one color and the bottom part in the same color and then this part which is crossing it in some other color. This is your choice. You would choose the cuts of the square root to start at 2 and at minus 2 and go to infinity, for example, and this would give the picture that I said. Is this okay? Now this is a bit arbitrary. For example, I can tell you, I think that if you put instead of a 1 here, you put 1 dot. Mathematica will choose some other branches, I think. Yes. Square root now is a product of 2 square roots. And this means a different choice of branches, as you will see. Now she chooses the ones we like. It's exactly the same surface, but the branches that a human would choose. Right? You go, and if you go through this line, you continue in the red part, and if you go to the blue, you continue in the blue part as you go around. Okay? Now, there is some logic to this. The only thing I changed was in z plus 1 over z, I put z plus 1 dot over z. And suddenly, Mathematica chooses these branches here. What we want to choose for the branches is something like this. Square root times square root. Because what is a square root? Where is the branch of the square root when the argument is 0? Where is the branch of the square root when the argument is 0? And the branch, by definition, where does Mathematica choose to put the cuts? She chooses to put the cuts where the argument is purely imaginary. In the previous case, where you have 4 minus z squared, the argument is purely imaginary if z is purely imaginary. So she decides to put a cut along the imaginary axis. It's stupid, but it's a possible choice. Okay? It's a canonical choice. You decide to put a cut whenever the argument is purely imaginary. When you have a product of 2 square roots, none of the argument is purely imaginary at the real at the imaginary axis. Only the product of them is. So a square root of a polynomial is different than the product of 2 square roots. In the sense of choosing the branches. Of course, in the sense of painting the surface, no. It's just different colors. But the full surface is the same. Okay? So not to have to worry with all this stuff, what we do is, and I will not delete because you might want to play with this, is we just define z, and we define what is the inverse of this map. which is z plus square root of the one we like, which is z minus 2 times z plus 2 over 2. Okay? And then we check that the inverse is okay. We compute f of inverse of f, and we simplify, and we get z, so we are happy. And we know that this is the nice choice of branches. Okay? So if you want, these are human square roots. Okay? Good. So this will be important for what follows. Now let's plot this airplane wing. Any question? If I'm going too fast, tell me. And yes.
I haven't been able to plot the whole the step where we.
The only thing now you do is, did you run it?
Yeah.
And now run the, no, don't run this one. Now you have to define what two plots. You have to run again two plots. Now this, I think you can erase. And now you can run that. And you can put this plot style going to red, comma blue, if you want to distinguish who was who before Mathematica decided to plot the two in the same color. Okay, now I want to go through the way I wrote, so the syntax, so a couple of syntax things that I wrote here, because there are a couple of interesting things that we can do. So suppose I want a function which, given a number, makes a vector with the real and the imaginary part of the number. Okay? So let's write here something. So we want a function to map 5 plus I6 to 5 comma 6.
Could you go up just a bit to see?
Yeah. So how can we do it? Well, we can say that f of z is equal to the vector real part of z comma imaginary part of z. And then we can apply f of 5 plus I6. Okay, let's not call it f. F is already used. Let's call it h. Oh, this would work. Okay, I'll define something like this. And then I just compute h applied to this. Now, why do I want this? Because what I want to do is, let me copy here, what I want to do is to do some parametric plots of, let me do it in a language which is clear but not as nice, of real part, say, imagine here you have some numbers, 10, 8, and here 10 comma 8. Okay, now I don't remember which parameters give nice wings. But you understand what I want. I want the real part and the imaginary part. Okay. Whatever. So this notation here, everyone understands what I'm doing. I'm doing parametric plots. I give a function of phi, another function of phi, and then I do the parametric plot of this. Okay? So I'm just doing, I have some number if you want. Okay, let's do an example which is even simpler. I'm just doing, for example, let's remove even f and just say e to the I phi an imaginary part of e to the I phi. Right? And we want to represent this circle, and this is it. Okay? Or we can put some ellipse like this, right? Or we can put something a bit, okay. Good. This is what we want to do. We want to pick something and plot its imaginary and real part. Now, it might be a bit nicer, now that we have this function, instead of writing all this, now that we define the function to take the real and imaginary part, we can use just h of this, because h of this gives a vector with the real and the imaginary part. And this becomes shorter. Well, it becomes shorter, but it becomes also harder to understand, harder to keep in mind what we are doing. Now we don't remember what h is. H is such a simple function that we might want to have the function explicitly, always. Because now we write h of this. H is real part, imaginary part, so of course this is the same as this. But it's less clean, less clear what we are writing. We forget what h is. So another way of defining a function, I have told you, is to define, instead of using this notation, another possible notation is to define h to be the function which gives real part of the argument, imaginary part of the argument, and that's it. This is the function. Okay? This is what the function is. Now, this notation is a bit more interesting because I can pick this definition, I can define it, and apply it immediately. I can say, apply simplified to this, apply cosine to this, or define a function and apply it right away. So what I can do is, I pick this function here, and I apply it, without calling h, to this. You see what this means? This is, I have this function, and I applied it to this. And this gives me 5,6. So I created a function on the spot and applied it directly to whatever I want. You see, this function I'm only going to use once. I don't want to create h for it. I want to create it and act with it immediately. Okay? So you see how much cleaner this part, for example, here would be, where I would have real part of all this stuff and imaginary part of all this stuff. I will now, without introducing any h or anything, I would just say, let's create the function which is real part of something, imaginary part of something, and apply this function directly to what we want to plot. So you see that this is a good compromise between having a short code and still having something which is readable. So if I would put h here, this is of course the same as just putting h, but this becomes very hard to read. It's h of f of something, it's not very clear what this is actually doing. But this way is quite economical. I create a function, I apply it directly to whatever I want to plot, and I plot it. Is this line clear to everyone? Yes. The ampersand means the end of the definition of the function. Okay? So with this ampersand means that I finished defining the function, and it's a function of one argument. And if there were two arguments, I would put cardinal 1, cardinal 2. And then there's a bracket to say that this function acts here. So this bracket is closed here and opened here, and there's another bracket here and here. Now, as you are saying, so first of all, does anyone understand this before I complicate a bit more? I create a function which picks whatever will be written next and computes its real and its imaginary part and makes a vector. And then I parametric plot that and that gives me the shape.
So that function acts on f.
That function acts on f. Very good. Okay? So there is another way of acting which might be useful, which is, suppose I Another way of defining action. Suppose I define a function. Let's do another example. The function which squares. Okay. Apply to 5. It's 25. I define the function and then it's applied to 5. So it's exactly the same as here. There is another way of defining application of a function, which is, and of course this is exactly the same thing as when I have sine 5. Now there is another way of applying sine of 5, which is sine applied probably from the mathematicians to 5. Okay, this A of applied to. Sine applied to 5. Now sometimes this has some advantages. Because I might want to have something that, for example, I have, say, 1 over x plus iy square. And we were doing something like, there are two options here. For example, I would take real parts, and I would get this. Then complex expands, and I would get this. And then simplify. This is a possibility, and it's very easy to read. But suppose I want to do it in the usual way. Real part here, then another bracket for complex expands, and then another one for simplify. And you get this, which I think you will agree that it's awful. On the other hand, this is really nice. I have simplify applied to the complex expand, which was applied to the real part, which was applied to this stuff here. And this is much nicer. Right? And it's much easier to debug. There are no brackets, and I don't need to be opening the brackets and closing the brackets and looking where are the brackets, and I just do this apply to. Okay? So now our parametric plot, we can do even a bit better, because as you were asking, it was not clear what these brackets were. I can now do a bit better and put here this, apply this to f. You see? I created my function and applied it to whatever comes next. And I don't have to see this bracket, where is it closing or whatever. Okay? Yeah? Created a function and applied it to f. Okay? So this here would be the final code. So let's go over it. This is the code that will work. And now this code, if I give you wing with, let me choose some reasonable parameters, with the point P being 0.2 plus I 0.1 and 0.8, this gives some wing. Okay? So let's see how this code works. It's just a composition of the kind of elements that I was telling you. Where is the pointer? Can you find the point? Can you see the point? So what is it? One more time. So I have a function, which is my Joukowsky map applied to a displaced circle. I have my circle. I displace it by a point P. And then I rescale the outcome. Okay? So this is my rescaled circle. P and R are not determined yet. I will give it to you later. And that's why I put a delayed evaluation here. Because I did not tell you yet what P and R is. Later, I assigned some values to P and R. But not yet, and therefore I put delayed evaluation. So here is what F. Once I tell you what P and R is, you will know what F is. What you did now is you created a function which picks the real and the imaginary part of whatever comes next and applied it to this f. Then you did parametric plots of that with an angle between 0 and 2 pi and then there's just statics. Okay? So this final is what I wanted to tell. So new elements here, a way of defining functions and a way of applying it to stuff. By using this x, which is very useful if you want to simplify, power expand, of trick to wesp, of whatever, you just put a nested train of this blah, blah, blah. If you don't want to put them at the end, of course. So let me know when I can move on. Okay. So I hope everyone can have this swing. Justin, do you want me to move on, or should I wait for you to?
How could she be complaining? You have some comma. What is that comma after?
It's a semicolon. Mm-hmm.
No, that's something strange. Because you have this delayed, so she could not give any error because she doesn't know yet what she will do. So there is some character or something that you have.
Oh, sorry, my keyboard is
not. Tech graphics.
Ah, I know what it is. Okay. Some of you before, when we were running yesterday or before, you had used wing already. And wing was already something. It was already the plot of the wing. And now we want to define wing with two arguments. So what Mathematica will do is put the previous definition here with two arguments and get completely confused. So you have to clear all wing. You see? If you already defined wing is equal to 3, and then you run this line, what will she think? She will say, 3 of P and R is equal to something. What are you trying to do? 3 is 3, it's protected, and she will start complaining. So if you didn't quit the kernel, you must run clear all of wing, because you might have wing defined from yesterday. It's exactly what I'm saying. You have to clear all wing. If you are getting an error message saying tag blah blah is protected, it's because wing is defined and you need to undefine it. You need to clear all wing. Clear all of wing. Did it work?
I mean, I
I will close, but I will open the other one, this one. The wing is here. So I hope your notebooks look like you have the first line and then you have the second line. Otherwise, okay? Otherwise, the manipulate will not. So I hope that you have these two functions defined by now. The f of z, the inverse f, and the wing function. And actually, after, does everyone manage to have the wing running? Okay, let me put the example which gives some nice wing here. You should tell me if everyone manages to have this. Do you have just this and this and it didn't work? Did you try making clear all of wing?
Show me what's not working. You don't have two dots there.
Okay.
You don't want yet to assign what P and R is, right? You want to tell her later what P of R is.
Can I assign F to the manipulator?
No, not the wing. Wing of 0.2, try to get to have this wing being plotted. To the manipulate or above? escape, PD escape. PD, partial derivative.
Oh.
And then to go down, control minus.
Find what I'm doing wrong.
This is a comma or two commas? Just a comma?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is here. What is this phi from 0?
What does this mean?
Should be. No, yeah, this is not what you want. Psi f of z is not what you want. You didn't check, for example, that f of if is 1. Otherwise, you would see that here it's not times, it's plus. Try again, please. But you chose 1, not 0.8 in the second argument.
But if I make it 0.8, I still get a circle.
But why do you have a 9 here?
Oh.
Okay. So let me explain now the manipulate part. So there's nothing really. Let's look at the last lines of the manipulate first. I define this is exactly the same as we saw before. We have some string plot of some vector of velocities with some x's and y's. So no subtlety on the second line. The last line I'm asking to show that string plot and to show the wing. And the wing has some displacement points, some r, and these are all parameters of the manipulates. So no subtlety there. Is it okay? Can I assume that everyone understands well the last three lines? The last line are the parameters of the manipulate. The manipulate will have three bars that I can scroll. For A, for B, and for R. That's what the last line will give. This is just telling to show the string plot and the wing. And this is just defining the string plot. So the only subtle line is the first one where I define du. What is the velocity field? Is this statement correct, that everyone understands the last three lines? Can everyone please look at the last three lines and tell me if everything is clear? So this is just for the manipulator to have three parameters. This is just asking to show the two things. And this just defines a string plot for some vector field. So all this was exactly like we saw yesterday. Sure, sorry. Okay, so these three lines... Please look at them. Please look at the last three lines and tell me if you have some doubt there so that I can move to the first line. It's okay? Good. Now, what is the first line? I have my map, my analytic function f of z. F of z is obtained by applying the inverse map to the flow in the plane, applying then the Joukowsky map back after rescaling the circle. So the mathematics are clear. The physics is clear. What did I do? Now, maybe what you did and what was not working yesterday is you were taking now the real part of this and then computing the velocity gradient. I decided to do differently. I took the derivative with respect to x, the derivative with respect to y, and then I took the real part, which of course commutes. So first, in the first step, the first entrance is dx of u plus dx of v, and the second entrance is dy of u plus dy of v. Sorry, dx of u plus I dy. It's hard, it's easier to write. The first entry is dx of u plus I dx of v, and the second entrance is dy of u plus I dx of v. Dy of v. And of course, this and this, they are real functions. So their derivative is real. So when I take the real part of this, the real part of this is equal to the vector that we want, dxu dyu. What did we gain by doing this? We gained that Mathematica did not need to worry about taking the derivatives after taking the real part. This is hard for Mathematica. What is the derivative of real part of x with respect to x? Mathematica freaks out. First, she should not be able to compute it because it's not well defined. It's not well defined because what is the derivative? A derivative is how does a function change when I change a bit the variable? But now the real part, how does the real part change? It depends. If I go in the imaginary direction, it doesn't change at all. If I go in the real direction, it changes. So derivative of real part is not well defined. As a complex variable. As a real variable, of course it is. But how does Mathematica think as real part of x? It's a function of x. What's the derivative of a function of f? It's f prime of x. Real prime, real part prime of x. And I start creating this nonsense that, of course, Mathematica will not plot. So by exchanging the order, by first computing the derivatives, which is perfectly okay, and then taking the real part, I don't have to deal with any of these issues. Okay? And this is just the gradient of the harmonic function u. Okay? And when we plot it, Mathematica takes some time for the manipulate. I think that when you go to a different value, it will change automatically the shape. And then if you go back to the previous value, it no longer takes any time. I mean, it doesn't render the lines slowly. It gets them immediately. And you can now play with the several parameters and get some different shapes. Okay? Now let's just see. Just to be, everything works here. But let's notice what would happen if I would not have done this subtlety, this subtle step with being careful with how to define square roots. Suppose I would define in the naive way, where I just write inverse of f as z plus square root of z squared minus 4. And then, because she will not choose the branches that we want, this would give something which would be completely crap. Simply because she's deciding to jump branches, you see. Clearly here there is some discontinuity. So actually this part is good, you see. This part of the plot is good. But you remember what I told you, that Mathematica decides to put the cuts along the imaginary direction. So everything on this side is crap, and everything on this side is perfect. Because everything on this side, you remember the surface is coincided, the way we painted red and blue. But there was this artificial cuts along the imaginary axis. Of course, if we superpose the two stream plots for one choice of cuts and for the other choice of cuts, then we will see many arrows on top of each other, but there will be a set of arrows which is the correct one. To choose directly the correct one, what we do is we use the correct inverse map. Correct in the sense that it picks the cheat that we want. Good, so I think, let me give you back the service to do the second part, and we are done. So some of you did not hand out the survey, so please keep it. And did you hand out? Did you give? Okay. Okay. So you did not give it back, so you still have. Did you give it back? Okay. So you have here one. Did you give the survey back? I didn't get one to begin with. Okay. Then you don't do the first one. Sorry. Just a second. Doesn't matter. Are you still have yours? Who gave it back? Who else gave it back? You did it? You also? Who also gave it back here? Sebastian? I still have two. Who else?
Ah,
you gave it back? Okay, good. Uh-huh. Yes?
I have a question. This doesn't work. Am I supposed to put an at sign here?
No. No. Either one or the other. You already put the brackets, so
you
that's
see,
okay.
My IF was wrong, but we are not here using IF. We're just using F, okay. which is...
You're right. Okay, let me see. What is that 10? Here, this 10... Try to compute whatever is here before. Try to compute that. This is a good thing about Mathematica. You can do by blocks and see, isolate the mistake. So just run that. There is a bracket missing at the end. Where is the comma between the two elements?
Where
is it, I'm asking? Is that comma correct? Can you? Yeah. It was not. Uh-huh. Yes? Where is your IF? This is the problem of the function. Make simplify here. No, at the end here. Yeah. // simplify.
It does not, but if you do it manually, you will get.
Make full simplify. But do F of IF, not IF of F. Okay, so it looks okay.
So, I'm in a slightly different definition here. Like this. Well, it's equivalent, right?
No, of course, it's okay.
So
but then... you might be plotting in some very different range of parameters. I know, but wait, here. A and B must be synchronized with these guys here. Because these are chosen to be the inverse of the translation and dilatation. So that's why I chose to parameterize them in that way.
So, two inverses, I'll have...
Do like I did there, or be careful.
Okay. Here, well, but to correct this, I said...
Let me answer a question about Mathematica. This is a question, a trivial question about maps. You can look there and compare and see how to fix. Let me think more about questions of Mathematica. Because you have commas instead of semicolons.
I don't
Right. Mm-hmm. This is clearly using the wrong map.
Okay, but I did this, right? When I invert it, you get this. And I put it here now, and it's still, and it's worse.
It's a very, that is a question of copy what I did and then try to map variable by variable and do it slowly changing, and it must be okay. Did it work?
No, I have another question. In my solution in MATLAB, I didn't use any inverse map, but it worked. I just, you see, you use the map to go from the plane when you know the solution of the rod to the cylinder. I assume that we know the solution of the cylinder and use the same map to go to the plane for the solution of the wing shape. And I used the same map and I got the results. I didn't inverse anything. I didn't have any.
I think you did.
No, I didn't have any roots. Any square.
Then I don't know why it works. It's only thing. Something's not working? F and IF are not defined. F and IF are not, IF is not defined.
But it's just up here.
Ah, but you define what is at Z, not at variable Z.
Ah, thank you.
Now it should work. But remove the prints. Just softer today.
It was good. Yeah, I think people seem to be able to use Mathematica now as well. Better than me. Yeah, I was having this problem with the real room to use the real eventually. That was one of my problems anyway. That's why I ended up doing the derivative by hand basically.
Another way is to define your own real parts as being something plus something with I replaced by minus I. Define what you mean by real parts.
I nearly got that desperate. I was.
Try clicking on plus.
Yeah.
and then changing by hand the value. And then enter.
It's really some problem with the sliders. That I don't know what it is.
Are you seeing this?
I love the sliders.
Is it normal? Or?
Wow, but you managed to remove the shade. That's cool.
Yeah.
How did you do?
I just did a region function which I.
Oof, but it's tough.
The inverse of G.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it's the interior of the circle before you mapped it to the ring. Good.
Nice. The thing is, I get that kind of vortex there.
I see. Yeah.
You don't get it?
No.
There?
No, no.
But you had it yesterday.
No, in my previous example, yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but this is the correct one.
So, what was the error in it?
I don't remember. I prepared this many months ago. Okay. Probably. You see, the idea is you started some flow which is.
Yeah.
This is a legitimate flow, but it will be a flow with sources or with some other boundary conditions, right?
This kind of problem. Yeah.
Yeah. You get some flow with some boundary conditions, but not the ones that.
The thing is, I take your picture and I don't know what form.
Well, there's nothing wrong with this picture. It is just not describing the flow of a fluid which starts at constant velocity past the object, right?
If I want to do a real flow.
Yeah, I think the functions, you are probably using the wrong maps.
But I'm using the map is, I do f minus 1, the inverse of f. Here I do the translation and after I apply f.
Ah, you know what you should be seeing? You are probably seeing the flow for you on the other sheet.
No, I tried, well, that's what I said, but if I...
I think that this is the flow described by the function u on the other sheet. So the function u lives in two sheets. On one sheet it describes this nice flow, on the other sheet it describes your flow.
Yeah, that's what I heard, but if I try...
For example, let me try. Let me try to... I think that I will get your if I put this minus here.
G, which was f of, right, we did a plus bi plus r e to the I phi.
Mm-hmm.
Today we've got there is 1 over r,
yeah.
And say that gives the upside down wing, as opposed to.
It's 1 over r, and with minus here, it's because I want to do the inverse of that transition.